ಓಂ. ಮೇ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮನ್ ಪ್ರೊಟೆಕ್ಟ್ ಅಸ್ ಬೋತ್, ಮೇ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮನ್ ಬೆಸ್ಟವ್ ಅಪಾನ್ ಅಸ್ ಬೋತ್ ದಿ ಫ್ರೂಟ್ ಆಫ್ ನಾಲೆಡ್ಜ್. ಮೇ ವಿ ಬೋತ್ ಅಪ್ಟೇನ್ ದಿ ಎನರ್ಜಿ ಟು ಎಕ್ವೈರ್ ನಾಲೆಡ್ಜ್. ಮೇ ವಾಟ್ ವಿ ಬೋತ್ ಸ್ಟಡಿ ರಿವೀಲ್ ದಿ ಟ್ರೂತ್. ಮೇ ವಿ ಚೆರಿಶ್ ನೋ ಇಲ್ ಫೀಲಿಂಗ್ ಟುವರ್ಡ್ ಈಚ್ ಅದರ್. ಓಂ ಪೀಸ್, ಪೀಸ್, ಪೀಸ್ ಬಿ ಅಂಟು ಆಲ್. ಇನ್ ದಿ ಲಾಸ್ಟ್ ಕ್ಲಾಸ್ ಐ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ಬ್ರೀಫ್ಲಿ ಮೆನ್ಷನ್ಡ್ ದಟ್ ದಿಸ್ ರಿಲೇಶನ್ಶಿಪ್ ಬಿಟ್ವೀನ್ ದಿ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ದಿ ಡಿಸೈಪಲ್ ಈಸ್ ಇಟರ್ನಲ್. ದಿಸ್ ಈಸ್ ಇನ್ ಅಕಾರ್ಡ್ ವಿತ್ ದಿ ಹಿಂದೂ ಬಿಲೀಫ್ ದಟ್ ದಿ ಲಾ ಆಫ್ ಕರ್ಮ ಈಸ್ ಪ್ರೆಡೋಮಿನೆಂಟ್. ವಾಟ್ ಎವರ್ ವಿ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ಡನ್ ಇನ್ ದಿ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್, ವಿ ವಿಲ್ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಟು ರೀಪ್ ದಿ ರಿಸಲ್ಟ್ಸ್. ಇಫ್ ಇನ್ ದಿ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ವಿ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ದಿ ಗುಡ್ ಫಾರ್ಚೂನ್ ಟು ಕಮ್ ಅಕ್ರಾಸ್ ಎ ಗುರು, ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಇಫ್ ವಿ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ಬೀನ್ ಟ್ರೂ ಡಿಸೈಪಲ್ಸ್, ದೆನ್ ಇನ್ ದಿಸ್ ಲೈಫ್ ಟು ಆಲ್ರೆಡಿ ಎ ಪರ್ಸನ್ ಹೂ ಈಸ್ ಟು ಗೈಡ್ ಅಸ್ ಟುವರ್ಡ್ಸ್ ಗಾಡ್ ಈಸ್ ಆಲ್ರೆಡಿ ಫಿಕ್ಸ್ಡ್. ಇನ್ ಅಕಾರ್ಡಿಂಗ್ ಟು ದಿ ಲಾ ಆಫ್ ಕರ್ಮ ದೇರ್ ಈಸ್ ನೋ ಪ್ಲೇಸ್ ಫಾರ್ ಆಕ್ಸಿಡೆಂಟ್, ದೇರ್ ಈಸ್ ನೋ ಕಂಟಿಂಜೆನ್ಸಿ, ದೇರ್ ಈಸ್ ನೋ ಎಮರ್ಜೆನ್ಸಿ. ಎವ್ರಿಥಿಂಗ್ ಈಸ್ ಪ್ರಿಫಿಕ್ಸ್ಡ್. ಲುಕ್ಸ್ ಅ ಲಿಟ್ಲ್ ಬಿಟ್ ಟೈಟ್, ದಟ್ ಆಸ್ ದೋ ವಿ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ನೋ ಫ್ರೀಡಮ್. ದೇರ್ ಈಸ್ ಇನ್ ಫ್ಯಾಕ್ಟ್ ಎ ಲಾಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಫ್ರೀಡಮ್ ಅಕಾರ್ಡಿಂಗ್ ಟು ದಿ ಲಾ ಆಫ್ ಕರ್ಮ. ಅದರ್ವೈಸ್ ದಿ ಲಾ ಆಫ್ ಕರ್ಮ ಇಟ್ ಸೆಲ್ಫ್ ಬಿಕಮ್ಸ್ ವಿಷಿಯೇಟೆಡ್. ಸೊ ದಿ ಗುರು ಈಸ್ ಫಿಕ್ಸ್ಡ್, ವಿ ನೋ ಹೂ ದಿ ಗುರು ಈಸ್ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಟು ಕಮ್. ಸಮಟೈಮ್ಸ್ ವಿ ಮೇ ನಾಟ್ ಈವನ್ ರಿಕಗ್ನೈಸ್ ಇಟ್, ಇಟ್ ಮೇ ಟೇಕ್ ಎ ಲಾಂಗ್ ಟೈಮ್, ಬಟ್ ದಿ ಗುರು ಈಸ್ ಆಲ್ರೆಡಿ ಫಿಕ್ಸ್ಡ್. When we study the life of Sri Ramakrishna, we find that Sri Ramakrishna, as soon as he saw some devotees, instantaneously he recognizes them and says, you belong to this place, and some people, you do not belong to this place. Doesn't mean he was rejecting, telling that there is a guru meant for you. This is an eternal relationship. How it works, we do not know. But this is a belief that it does work. So I also mentioned that not only the disciple chooses the guru also chooses the disciple without consciously knowing. There are some gurus who know these will be my disciples. Sometimes even the guru doesn't know that this would be my disciple. But nevertheless, they will be the gurus. I gave an example of how Dronacharya became unwilling, unknowing guru to his disciple Ekalavya. But many times the guru knows this is my disciple because the relationship is already fixed. And funnily, you know, the Hindu women believe that their husbands are going to be there life after life until they attain liberation. So, if they do not like their husbands, better strive for liberation. That's the only way they can get rid of their husbands as soon as possible. I'll give you an example of how Sri Ramakrishna had accepted a person and even offered him, I will initiate you. But the disciple didn't care. He said, no, I don't want initiation. I don't care for initiation. I don't believe in initiation. But you know, the relationship cannot be broken down. Sri Ramakrishna was a very humorous person. You see, when he got married to Holy Mother, who was a small child, that was a very funny incident. That in those days, the boys had to pay, shell down money to the girls. Now you see the result of karma. Now it is the girls who are paying back with compound interest. So Sri Ramakrishna had to pay, I think, about 300 rupees in those days, which is a good amount. Or that was equivalent to about 60 months of his salary at the rate of 5 rupees per month. That means almost, you know, 5 years of his salary he had to pay. So the marriage had taken place and they had to borrow jewelry for the wedding ceremony from the neighbors. And the girl was very happy. She went to sleep. But the mother of Sri Ramakrishna was worried that how to give back the jewelry had to be given back. It was only borrowed. So Sri Ramakrishna was an expert. I don't know where from he got that. Without any knowledge of the girl, he removed all the jewelry very nicely. In Vedanta, Hindu mythology, Lord Shiva had acquired a peculiar title. He is the Lord of Thieves, Emperor of Thieves, Taskaranam Pataye Namaha. Salutations to the Emperor of Thieves. What does he steal? Ordinary thief only steals what belongs to you. But this thief, he steals us. Once he steals our hearts, what else do you think is there to be remains to be stolen? So Sri Ramakrishna very adroitly removed all the jewelry. And next morning the girl got up, started crying, I am missing my jewelry. Then her uncle Neel Madhav, I think, he got very angry, took the girl away. Then Sri Ramakrishna said, you see, the tie has been already tied. So it doesn't matter, let them take her away. Now they cannot break the relationship. So in the same way, this Guru Sishya, it is a kind of wedding also. We sometimes, Swamis also give that example of marriage. Once a Christian missionary, I think, came to my predecessor, Swami Bhavyananda, wanted to convert him to Christianity. So Swami said, I understand that your Jesus Christ is very superior, but I'm afraid it is too late. I am already married to Sri Ramakrishna. So Sri Ramakrishna, statement is, once this tie has been done, there is, for eternity, there is nothing which can break it. This is very reassuring, because however unworthy the disciple is, once the guru accepts him, there is no way that the disciple can be abandoned. Swami Vivekananda, he once wrote to one of his Western disciples, Indian disciples, go down as much as you want to. But even if you go to the lowest place, I will pull you up, because you know you are tied to me with a tight rope. So there was an incident. Sri Ramakrishna saw a devotee. This man used to visit him. And Sri Ramakrishna knew this person belongs to this place. Sri Ramakrishna is to this place, means to him. But the devotee, he liked Sri Ramakrishna, but not as a guru. So, Sri Ramakrishna himself told him, why don't you take initiation? He said, no, I don't care, I don't believe in it. In fact, I don't want any guru. And Sri Ramakrishna smiled and said, where will you go? And Sri Ramakrishna passed away. And long after that, slowly the understanding dawned upon this man, what an invaluable opportunity he had lost. So he could not bear it. One day he went to the Ganges side, started weeping, oh Lord, you yourself told me that you will give me initiation and I have lost it. Then you see, after some time, Sri Ramakrishna appeared to him and initiated him. And that's it. The man was very happy. So this guru is not dead. The guru comes in many forms, visible form, invisible form. There is no death, neither for the disciple nor for the guru. So when does this relationship break? It never breaks. When the differentiation between the guru and the disciple is completely destroyed. When can it be destroyed? Only when they become completely one. Only then you can say there is no guru, there is no disciple. This is strictly according to the non-dual philosophy. We have been discussing the tremendous place a guru is held by all Hindus, by all spiritual aspirants everywhere, all over the world. And those who neglect to do so will do so at their own cost. Russian Orthodox Church, it also recognizes the value of a guru. They call it Starez. That is a guru equivalent. Those who, of you who have read The Way of a Pilgrim, and if you have not read, I suggest that you read it. Such a marvelous autobiography of a spiritual aspirant, how he became illumined, and very beautiful language, and very easy to understand also. So this guru-sishya relationship is very, it is eternal, it is very ancient, and without guru, I can say nobody can progress in spiritual life. And there are so many people I come across, they say, we don't want gurus. It is their ego. Why should, one problem is because of the ego. Why should I accept somebody as superior to me? The second problem is that maybe I will be involved in rules and regulations. I want to be free. What a paradox. The very idea of accepting a guru is to become free. And here the man says that I don't want to enter into bondage. But this bondage with the guru is one which leads him out of the bondage. He remains more bound if he doesn't have a guru. Oh, I should, maybe rules and regulations are there. Maybe I have to bow down my head. Maybe I have to accept him as my superior. We don't know what he is going to do in future. It is true, you don't know. That is the very reason why you should have a guru. Guru is very, very important. Though, it's very difficult to tell to the people nowadays, especially in the West, even in India, so many young men, they have become like modern people. They don't want to accept the idea of a guru. It's not possible to progress in spiritual life. Simple fact. Matter of fact. Okay. We have been also discussing that this guru-sishya relationship has many aspects. Briefly, we had also discussed there are four kinds of teachers. That is, the real teacher is the only guru, a god, Satchidananda. But he manifests himself in three forms. One, this what is called the divine guru. And second, the human guru, or the who helps us physically. Divine guru means the inner guru. Inner, our own mind, when it becomes purified, it acts like an unfailing guide, intuition. Then the third type of guru we briefly mentioned is anybody who has gone one step ahead of us can help us. He is not our real guru, but he is called secondary teacher. There is a beautiful story in the Bhagavatam how Avadhuta had attained illumination from learning from 24 gurus, including one kite. You know, Sri Ramakrishna mentions this story. One kite somehow got a piece of meat. And as soon as it got, all the crows surrounded it. And then they started harassing it. Wherever it goes, the crows will follow, cawing, shouting, surrounding, and pecking and all that. So the kite tried to run here and there, but it couldn't. Finally, in disgust, it dropped the piece of meat. As soon as it did, all the crows left it and went after the piece of flesh. Now the Avadhuta is a sincere spiritual aspirant. He was observing this. So he learnt. What lesson he learnt from this? That do not be attached to anything. Do not hoard anything. The moment you hoard, wherever there is a will, you know, wherever there is a will, there is a relative. So if we have something, immediately people will be there out to get it from us. So do not have hoard anything. That is just to live by God's will. Like that, from 24 gurus, one important guru is earth. How is the earth the guru? How much abuse the earth undergoes? They dig, they defecate, and they do all sorts of things. And with what patience it goes on, not only it goes on bearing, it goes on sustaining us, nourishing us, holding us up. So that is one of the great lessons, in infinite patience. There was a great disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Premananda, and I was reading the reminiscences. So every morning he gets up, first thing a holy man does is to repeat the names of God. And then he also repeating, Sha, Sha, Sha. May I bear, may I bear, may I bear. You see, it's very important. I found it extremely useful. Early morning you get up and say, may I have forbearance, may I have forbearance, may I have forbearance. Consciously. Then you see how many things we have to put up. With the other people and with many things which are not favorable for us, which are not suitable for us, which we do not want, and all those things. But if we go on getting irritated, then our life will be wasted. So, it's a great lesson to be learned from this. Yes, take the name of God. We all know it. But this one, forbear, forbear, forbear. It's a wonderful thing. And this man, who was repeating it, was not a spiritual aspirant. He was an illumined person. But why was he doing? Because even for those people, as long as they close their eyes, enter into samadhi, there is no outside world, no problem. No world, no problem. But the moment they open their eyes, there is the world, and another name for world is problem. Yeah, Sri Ramakrishna made a compact, a contract with Hriday. Hriday, if I get angry and start shouting at you, you keep quiet. And if you get angry and shout at me, I will keep quiet. And it worked wonderfully well for a long time. The need of a competent guru is even more necessary after the aspirant has acquired the preliminary virtues. And when he finds himself grappling with the unknown forces of the spiritual world, the psychic high-tension wires is as risky as playing with fire. Most of us, we do not attain that high state. But then, if we sincerely go on practicing for years together, then we reach a state where no books, no outsiders have any inkling of where, what we have to do, how we have to escape and all those things. I will give you a small incident. There was a very great Swami, whom we consider as one of the most illumined Swamis, Swami Virajananda. His book, Towards the Goal Supreme, is one of the most wonderful books. This incident illustrates two points, which I will mention later on. So the Swami went out for austerity in the Himalayas, and after some time he acquired severe headache and migraine headache. So he could not bear it, he could not meditate, he could not even sleep. Then he came down, he went to Swami Brahmananda, who was the president of our order at that time, and told him, this is what happens, I can't meditate, I can't read, I can't sleep. Whole day I am suffering from this. Then very politely Swami Brahmananda suggested, why don't you go to your guru and explain the problem? And his guru was none other than Holy Mother herself. So he went to Jairambati and he just entered the place. Holy Mother was sitting. He did not say anything. She looked up and said, she was startled. Baba, my son, where have you been meditating? Not place, in outside place. Means, you know, we have a fixed location within the body where we fix our mind. Where have you been concentrating? In which place of the body, part of the body? And he said, in between the eyebrows. She said, who asked you to do that? That's not a proper way to do it. You must concentrate at the heart. And that's all. Within a few days, the migraine headache totally disappeared. Now, 2 points from this incident. 1 point was, Swami Brahmananda was considered as the spiritual son of Sri Ramakrishna. Do you think he was not capable of solving this problem? He, the Swami, could see what his disciples are doing in the Western countries. Once he said, you know, he had disciples, Swami Prabhavananda and others in America. One day casually he was telling, do you think I don't know what so-and-so is doing in America? They have that insight to see in the whole world nothing is a secret for them. They have that power. So he was quite capable of solving this problem. Why didn't he do it? Because he wanted to reinforce the disciples' faith in the Guru. If the Guru solves the problem, you know, the devotion for the Guru will increase, which will help him spiritually. So he came to Holy Mother, and Holy Mother saw immediately the problem. The Guru need not have been told, I am suffering from migraine headache, I can't even lead a normal life, let alone meditation. She could, by just having one look, she could see that he had developed a terrible problem. Now, it's very interesting because there are so many people. I myself have come across a few people who had started practicing pranayama just by reading books, and another person who started practicing concentration in between the eyebrows because it is written that the best place for concentration. Undoubtedly, it is a best place, but only very few people are fit to focus their minds upon the eyebrows. It is not a big secret really why one should not do it. There is a simple physiological explanation for it, though many people do not know about it. What is it? Supposing you have an injury. It pains, is it not? What is the pain? It is a signal that something has gone wrong here. You attend. It is a signal to the mind that you pay attention here. So as soon as wherever there is pain, did you notice our mind goes there? And wherever our mind goes, blood starts to accumulate there. Have you noticed it? If a person is very angry, his whole face is flushed. If you are hungry, then where is the blood focused, concentrated? In the stomach. If you have a desire for something else, wherever there is a desire, there is a sense organ. And wherever the sense organ is thought of, then the blood accumulates there. It is a very commonly experienced fact. So it is good if there is an injury, blood accumulates there. And that blood has what is called, you know, flushing out function. It kills the germs, cleans the place, and it tries to heal it. That is very good. But the same physiological fact or psychological fact also applies and can bring harm when a person tries to concentrate in between the eyebrows. Naturally, the mind will be there. When there is mind, what happens? The blood starts accumulating there. And when the blood accumulates there for no conceivable reason, it becomes a disease. And many people develop severe migraine headaches because of this stupid problem. And afterwards, no doctor can cure that person. The only remedy is because it has become a habit. So the mind always goes there. And somehow the problem becomes chronic. And it can create severe obstructions to even normal life. So a guru is very necessary. Even a little bit, if we advance in spiritual life, we leave behind many things. And nobody in the physical world, no books can ever going to explain, much less advise, what to do at that stage. Only a person who has already reached that state and beyond, only he knows how to advise the disciple what to do. Now, here is a very interesting piece of information. As we advance in spiritual life, in the general idea we have about spiritual life is the more we advance, the problems become less, the temptations become less. No, there is a place in spiritual advancement. Once we reach that place, after that no temptations are ever going to touch us. But until we reach that place, the more we advance towards that place, the more will be the temptations, the problems, the powers of the mind. This is a fact many, many people do not understand, are incapable of understanding. Supposing a person has developed concentration of mind without sufficient purification of the mind. Just imagine, say a small boy, if he takes up a stone and throws it at somebody, how much injury does it cause? Very little. Just imagine, if the same boy grows up into a young man and goes to a gymnasium, develops muscles of iron, and then he takes up the stone and then throws, which would be more harmful? In a similar way, when the mind is not capable of concentrating, if any passions occur in that mind, those passions are not capable of doing much injury. But if the same mind has acquired tremendous amount of concentration, but not the power of self-control, if the passions arise, we know how much powerful those passions will be. They will be proportionate to the power of the concentration. Many people do not understand this fact. So as an aspirant advances in spiritual life in the beginning, until he reaches a particular place, I will mention it a little later, the more he advances, the more the pitfalls, the more the dangers, the more the passions. That is why sometimes we see the so-called highly advanced persons all of a sudden falling to very stupid things. Why does it happen? You know, suppose a guru has come from India and living a holy life, and everybody is, you know, admiring such wonderful concentration, power, meditation, such wisdom, everything. After suddenly you see that he had married an ordinary, you know, woman or something, whatever, just as an example. So you think, even I being stupid, I would not marry that kind of person. How come this highly advanced person, he made such a mistake? It is not a mistake. You know, because he was so advanced, his power of mind was so great that his passion also increases proportionate to that. And then he loses all discrimination. Only after that he realizes that where he was and where he had fallen. That is why Swami Vivekananda used to say very often, if among the 100 spiritual aspirants, 96% of them become hypocrites, 3 of them will become go mad, and only perhaps 1% reaches the goal. It is not, don't exactly calculate 96% will be hypocrites. It is just figure of speech, you know. This is not exactly a calculating type of figure. Many people become hypocrites. Or the most common type of disease that occurs is we become mechanical. As we go on practicing, you know, in the beginning there is a lot of enthusiasm. And then there is a kind of mechanization, or to just get up at a particular time, sit down for japa meditation at a particular time, read something at a particular time. Everything goes on in a very mechanical way. That's why a guru is necessary, because a guru is not merely a map. A guru is a living dynamo of spiritual power. In his presence, even a dead person will come out to be alive. So, if this is the truth, how much true it is when a person advances in spiritual life, then there is nobody to guide him what to do, what not to do. In fact, so many so-called Christian saints had to suffer a terrible amount of undergo suffering just because they didn't have proper teachers to guide them in the nick of time. A lot of troubles can be avoided if one has a proper guru. This another function of the guru is to awaken the power of spiritual intuition in the disciple. So the well-known hymn to the guru speaks of the preceptor as one who opens the eye of the disciple blinded by ignorance. Gukaro andhakarastu rakara tant nivartaka andhakara nivartyatu guru iti abhidiyate. A guru is one not meant for advising for in worldly affairs. A guru has nothing to tell to the disciple about worldly affairs. Not that he cannot tell, it is not his business. For example, if I have a physiological problem, I do not need to go to my guru. But there are disciples, you know, my disciples, they phone, I have a headache. I say, okay, that is a very good news, because first it shows you have a head really. Now go to a doctor and don't bother me about these things. If there is psychological problem, then go to a psychologist. It is no bad thing to go to a psychologist. Psychology is not madness. There are many kinds of, you know, aberrations of the mind. Go to a psychologist. Only when it comes to spiritual guidance, come to me. Come to a guru. The relationship has nothing to do with anything physiological. My guru is everything. I don't do anything without the permission of guru. Even if I have to go to toilet, he will mobile phone, you see. This is carrying, I mean, becoming nuisance to the guru. Now, instead of progressing in spiritual life, he is only regressing actually. Anyway, so the relationship is only a spiritual relationship. We have to bear it in mind. Then, a guru transmits that quickening impulse which ignites, as it were, the dormant spiritual seed, as it were. He brings it to light. It is true, all of us have that seed. Do not worry about it. All of us are going to be spiritual because we are all potentially divine. But it depends upon how fortunate we are, how earnest we are in bringing that seed to the proper conditions. It must be brought out, it must be planted in the proper soil and all those things. This is what a guru does. He helps us to bring out that seed which is lying hidden and makes it blossom. How does the guru do it? So in Vedanta, there are ways. The guru transmits this quickening impulse. He does it through the process called Diksha or initiation. According to one of the Upanishads called Tejabindu Upanishad, initiation is of three types. There are three types of initiation: Anava, Shakta and Shambhava. The first Anava is the ordinary mode in which the guru communicates a mantra to the disciple. This is the most usual method. The guru fixes an auspicious date and he gives a particular mantra to the disciple. So even this type of initiation is of tremendous importance to us. I will tell you why. One reason is that, you know, our whole life is only wasted. Which form of God should I meditate upon? And which type of spiritual discipline should I follow? And when should I sit for meditation? Where should I sit for meditation? I get all sorts of queries, you know. Somebody came and saw me. I am meditating on the floor, on a carpet. Do you think that will prevent the earth from sucking all my spiritual power? I said, no, it is not enough. First you pay 108 pounds of Guru Dakshina to me. That is, then I will tell you what is the best way. What is the connection between, you know, sitting on the carpet and then your spiritual power? This is not a proper way of question. So, our whole life, mind is restless. Why are we going from guru to guru, from religion to religion, from one spiritual book to another spiritual book, for worshipping from one form of God to another form of God? Because two reasons. One reason is we don't have strong faith. Second is our mind is very restless. And with restless mind, we cannot progress in spiritual life. So what does the Guru do? He simply comes and says, look, this is your God, I mean form of God. This is your mantra. This is the path you follow. Definite, no question about it. You just close your eyes and follow the Guru. So he puts an end to this restlessness of the mind. So that is also very important in life. How many of us waste our time year after year it is going? The paradox of it is, we think that, let us think, it is a very intimate matter. It is a great spiritual matter. I have to think deeply. It is not that I am going to buy some radio or anything. This is a permanent relationship. Let me think deeply. The assumption behind is that he is going to live 101 years. And then he will decide long before what to do, what not to do. Who knows? Death may come tomorrow. It is good to have some kind of discrimination before you choose a guru, but don't take too much of a time. Then the question comes, suppose I make a mistake and I choose a wrong guru. There is nothing called choosing a wrong guru. Because the real guru, there is only one guru. You have no choice. Any guru you choose, like Ford's quip, you know, Ford was producing black colored jeeps. Somebody went and said, this boring black color. Why not other colors? He said, fine, you can have any color you want as long as it is black. Whichever guru you choose, who is that guru, real guru? It is only God. If you are in earnest, even a bad guru also will guide you to the same goal, because it is not the instrument which is guiding you. The human body is only an instrument. It is that which is within that instrument who is guiding us. If we are in earnest, even the guru also may attain illumination. Who knows? So that is a good, great benefit. So this is the first type of conveying this power. It is called anava, or is called mantra diksha, mantra. In the second type, the guru transmits power directly by a touch or a fixed gaze. This is a wonderful thing. Sri Ramakrishna very often used to do this, just by a touch or just by looking at it. You know, there is an incident. Swami, I'm not 100% sure, I think it was Swami Vijnanananda. He was sitting and Sri Ramakrishna was slowly gazing at him. He felt as though something is rising within him. Many, many times this has happened to many people in the presence of Sri Ramakrishna. Just by looking at the person, by mere will, they can transmit spirituality. And the highest and last one is that rare form of initiation by which the guru gives the highest illumination by his mere wish. This is very rarely we see. In this case, the guru and the disciple need not even meet. The guru may be in Australia, the disciple may be in Antarctica. But somehow a connection is established. And somehow the guru transmits that power. And somehow the disciple says, I am illumined. It's a very rare case, but that is the highest form of initiation. So let us not wait for that kind of initiation. It's not going to happen. The guru has another function to perform. One of the grave defects of a spiritual aspirant and a persistent obstacle to spiritual progress is egoism. Of course, that is the root cause of all our problems, egoism. Nothing wrong with ego. The problem is with ism. What is wrong? Ism means the ego, the pure ego, identifying itself with whatever it happens to come into contact with. The example given is, suppose there is a crystal, and it is very clear. If you bring a red flower near the crystal, how does the crystal appear to be red? The ego by itself is pure because it only knows I am, soham, I am he. But the moment it comes into contact, I am the body, I am the sense organs, I am the mind, I am the thoughts, I am the emotions, that is called ism. So that is the wrong thing here. And spiritual aspirants can become very egotistic. I tell you, they declare that they are going to be spiritual, but actually, through spiritual practice, many times their egoism doubles and triples and it goes on multifold increase. Why does it happen? See, just to meet an ordinary person. Are you a spiritual aspirant? No. He is very frank about it. I don't believe in God. I don't believe in spirituality. I'm an ordinary man. I eat, drink and sleep. Suppose there is a person who is doing a little japa and meditation. Are you a spiritual aspirant? What do you mean by I am saying? Don't you see? I am meditating, I am doing this, I am doing that. He doesn't want to tell by his own mouth that I am a spiritual aspirant. He wants you to find or observe him. Is everybody looking at me, whether I am meditating or not? How much of this egoism can increase by turning our attention to God? This is one problem. Another problem would be, a spiritual person in the beginning of his spiritual life becomes extraordinarily sensitive. Do you know sensitivity? When our body is normal, then it has some amount of sensitivity. But when it is any part of the body is injured, that part becomes reddish and swollen, and even a feather touch will be very painful, is it not? In the beginning of spiritual life, a person becomes extraordinarily sensitive to other people. Will say, oh, this fellow, he is showing off his spirituality. And it hurts us. It hurts. Why should it hurt? After all, they are right. If we are eating, oh, this fellow is supposed to be a spiritual person. He is eating like me. That hurts. No, everything hurts. We become very, very sensitive. That's why a guru is very necessary, because he is there to break that ego by criticism, by so many other factors. So, obedience to the will of an enlightened master is perhaps the best safeguard against all this. I'll tell you an incident. Probably some of you have read it. There was a disciple of Swami Brahmananda, Swami Nirvanananda, Surji Maharaj, we used to call him. So this young man, very devoted to his guru, and one day he was serving the guru. He was specially an attendant to Swami Brahmananda. And Swami Brahmananda was in the habit of getting up very early in the morning and going out and washing his hands and all that. The disciple is supposed to get up even before that, make the water a little bit warm so that in winter season it won't be cold, and serve the guru. One day, the disciple was late. Just by few seconds, he was running actually behind. And Swami Brahmananda, he as soon as the disciple came near, gave one slap. It's very interesting, because do you think that such an illumined person like Swami Brahmananda becomes really impatient? Do you think that he got angry because the disciple did not come 1 minute before and waiting for him? Do you think that would be our judgment? What type of man is this? Even we will not do such things, such kind of reactions, much less an illumined soul like Swami Brahmananda. But you know, many times, these gurus, they know that a tree of egotism is growing within. What they do and what is the real cause why they do have no real connection at all. Such great souls have that capacity to see and where we are going to be hurt in the future. They, as it were, nip the thing in the bud itself so that it will never grow. I'll give a small incident. There was one Swami, in those days, one Brahmachari, and Swami Shivananda was the president of the order. So, once it so happened, this Brahmachari was sent for doing some relief work. And he went with some volunteers and did the work extraordinarily well, very capable way of doing it. Everybody was praised for him. And they all closed the work, came back to Belur Math, and they had to pay their presents to the president. So the devotees went to the Swami. Meanwhile, the Brahmachari novice went to take bath, went to the shrine of Sri Ramakrishna. He came a few minutes later. As soon as he entered the room, Swami Shivananda started scolding him left and right. "You fellow, stupid fellow, this kind of service to the people, what kind of man you are, what type of spiritual progress you are making, etc., etc." There was no connection at all. He was just coming innocently, very happy. He just finished his work so beautifully. He didn't understand at all. And the devotees were stunned because they were only giving good reports about this novice to the Swami. And this was the reaction of the Swami. And so they all saluted him after some time, went away. At night time that day, again all the monks and novices came to the room of Swami Shivananda. That was our custom in those days, even these days, to go to the president's room. And Swami Shivananda was very gracious now. Morning he was ferocious, now he is very gracious. And this novice was with a downcast face, you know, castoral face we call it. He was standing there because it was still hurting him. So everybody saluted him, waited for some time, went away. This novice was standing. "So Mahapurusha, my son, come here. Did you know why I scolded you in the morning?" He said, "No, Swami, I don't know." Then Swami Shivananda said, I saw that the seed of egoism is already planted in you. Everybody was praising you. How wonderfully well you carried out the work. Now it might not come out, but in future it will come out. So I have removed it. It is never going to come, because whenever he tends to think of how well I have done, he will also remember the terrible scolding scene. So this breaking up of the egoism is one of the functions of the guru. By scolding, by criticizing, by finding faults, or by correcting lovingly, somehow or other, the guru steers the man out of these traps, pitfalls of egoism. And egoism has many, many, many pitfalls. How powerful is this ego? How many myriad ways it can express itself? Only it knows, we do not know. The power of the unconscious, terrible it is. So, these are many of the reasons, and one of the most important reasons why a guru is necessary is, the function of a guru is to connect the disciple to a spiritual tradition, sampradaya, or a line of gurus, guru parampara. A spiritual tradition is usually started by an avatara, an incarnation of God, or an illumined seer, rishi, whose spiritual knowledge and power are preserved through a succession of gurus. When a person receives initiation from a guru, he also gets a share of the knowledge and power circulating in that corporate mystical body. You see, the Christian church doesn't consider the church merely a building or an organization. It considers it as a mystical body. And Swami Vivekananda had instructed us, this Ramakrishna order is the very body of Sri Ramakrishna. If you injure any part of this organization, then you are injuring the body of Ramakrishna. I'll give you a very small incident. Once a monk, and you know, many people think torn cloths and torn shoes, dirty shoes, they are indicative of the spiritual greatness. You know, unconsciously we think, you know, I don't care for a new shoes, as though I am a great spiritual person. Maybe really it is because he doesn't care, or because his unconscious is craving for some kind of spiritual, you know, recognition. This person is very dispassionate person, doesn't care for anything. So one of the monks was wearing a dirty old shoe, and he was walking. And then Swami Shivananda, he noticed it and he said, you come here. Be careful, the shoe you are wearing is not your shoe. It belongs to Sri Ramakrishna. Just imagine, suppose Sri Ramakrishna has given you a small piece of cloth or a shoe. How will you keep it? Do you just throw it out like an old torn out thing? With extraordinary reverence you keep it. You, in fact, that is the greatest treasure anybody can receive, is it not? My guru, you know, whenever he initiates, the guru has to bless the disciples. So he has a khadam. Khadam means wooden slipper of his guru, Swami Brahmananda, which he wrapped up in a piece of cloth. And whenever we bow down, he will give one tap on the head with it. I think he didn't give a big tap on me, but that is his blessing. You know, whatever belongs to our guru, whether it is a shoe or a piece of cloth, we revere it as Sri Ramakrishna himself, as a relic of Sri Ramakrishna, representing of him. The subject which we will discuss in our next class, which is called chief symbols. What are the place of chief symbols? How do they help a spiritual aspirant in spiritual life? But now to conclude a little bit about it. So the guru, he connects us with a spiritual tradition. So the whole order or sampradaya or guru parampara, as though that power is still coming down. It is like the sacred Ganga water coming from that heights of Himalayas which nobody has seen. But right from that place until they merge in the ocean, the entire thing is sacred. As it were, it is the same Ganga. You don't say the place where Ganga originated is 100% sacred, and at Varanasi it is 50% sacred, at Calcutta is only 20% sacred, and at Ganga Sagar it is only 0% sacred. No, it is all sacred all through. So the mantra received by the disciple from the guru actually is coming from an avatara, and that is where its greatness lies. It is capable of taking us to that highest goal. That is one of the greatest reasons why a guru is necessary. And for that, he himself must be connected to some great tradition. That is why usually we seek a guru who is coming from a tradition, guru parampara. It doesn't, of course, preclude. Suppose somebody has no connection with any tradition, but he was very earnest and he becomes illumined. But he himself becomes the founder of that particular sampradaya or tradition. So tradition is very, very important in more ways than one. Very briefly, how it works is like this. Supposing one of our swamis tend to do something which is not befitting. If he forgets from which tradition he is coming, to which order he belongs, he is more likely to go wrong. But suppose suddenly he remembers, I belong to the Ramakrishna order. I am not an individual. I belong to the Ramakrishna order. And if I do something wrong, then the bad name of the whole order will get spoiled. I have no right to do that. The moment he remembers that, you know, even if he is inclined to do something wrong, he will think 100 times before doing anything wrong. But whereas an individual, there is nothing, nobody to look forward, you know. Who knows what I am going to do? I will do something, whatever I want. So there is a good thing to be connected to a tradition. And we strongly believe that there is a special power flowing from this tradition which is capable of uplifting us. Which means, just as an example, if I am a Swami of the Ramakrishna order, I am not an individual. The whole Ramakrishna order, the whole power of the avatara is behind me. Maybe I am like a small tap, but the source from which the water is coming, it is not coming from Thames River. It is coming from Sri Ramakrishna himself. That is the strength for a disciple gets whenever he is initiated through a guru who is well connected with a traditional sampradaya. There are one or two more points actually. We will discuss it in our next class, I think, which would be 18th. Yeah. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.